say when they go. Bob?
Okay, well, as usual, the ground's always changing. So when I give an answer, it has to reply to the ground of each situation. Uh-huh. But the ground involves the figures, that's what you're encountering, the UFOs, mm-hmm. figure overhead, unobserved figure overhead kind of thing, right? Or unidentified figure overhead. When you're dealing with that figure, you have to know that there are medium cool or medium hot kinds of aliens. There are violent aliens, and there are friendly aliens. All right? They're just like us. They're as pink as the subgeniuses are themselves. Okay, so you have to use your intuition, and that's why you have to stay tuned to Bob, which is one of the most important ways to hone your intuition. Don't read Dimensions magazine or Common Ground or Time magazine or This magazine or Nation magazine. Don't read any magazines, actually. You've got to, because that's using visual space. You know what I mean? In other words, I'm not being judgmental against any particular magazine. Mm-hmm. It's just that visual space won't hone your intuition to deal with these encounters, which we're going to have more of. So you've got to hone your intuition through your ear. Remember in Finnegan's Wake, the appropriate image all through the book was the earwig, that little insect that crawls into your, you know, the people feared this insect that would crawl into their ear while they were sleeping and eat away their brain, all right? The earwig. That is Western man visual space bias, man's fear of intuition and waking up the right hemisphere, if you want to call it that, the right hemisphere. But using your intuition has to be done through the acoustic medium. Now, that is a skill you have to develop in relation to the UFOs. The problem is that's not a skill to deal with the planet today, the discarnate state. You can't specialize in the right hemisphere or the left hemisphere, the visual space or acoustic space. You have to become comprehensive in using all your faculties and wits. So in the context of UFOs, you can specialize by communicating and honing yourself via radio with Bob. That's dealing with the ear. It's emphasizing the right hemisphere, okay, the acoustic space. But since, if you look at the page 147 of the High Weirdness by Mail, where it has a perfect pitch chart, you see that the user is monarch of the universe, and the ghetto is outer space. When you have the technological art form of mass man and the hidden ground of the second coming, with outer space as a ghetto, we are going to have more of these guys dropping in. Mm-hmm. All right? You know, because we now inhabit the whole universe. And I mean by universe, all the dimensions external and internal. So if we inhabited both, then you can see how the UFOs, who are kind of like a bureaucratic gang out there in the turn left at Greenland and head out towards Jupiter, you know, that kind of zone, they're still kind of locked in visual space, even though they can travel interdimensionally. They still identify with some kind of bureaucratic control. So they are having an identity crisis as much as we are. Only subgeniuses can handle it, the identity crisis, because we're all subsumed and imploded in a situation that no material form, discarnate or incarnate, can deal with.
So how do we know when we can handle it?
That's how you have to develop that. It's called your whiff aura.
Whiff?
Aura whiffing. You know, people read auras with their eye or maybe with their ear, but hasn't been talked about the technique of smelling people's auras. We call it aura whiffing. So that's what you've got to develop. You can develop your osmic sense internally and externally by listening to my show. All right? And then that's how you will be able to tell, by the smell of their aura. And you know what smell? It means slack. Do you know what smell? Can you predict, you being a subgenius, what smell would mean slack and encourage a optimistic relationship?
What type of smell?
Yeah, what smell? Name one.
Well, I can think of a taste.
Yeah, that's close to smell.
Okay.
Yeah, what taste?
I think it's kind of like a nectar, kind of a sweet nectar down the back of the throat.
Oh, that's the Maharishi's technique, the 13-year-old guru. You pass through that zone, eh?
Yeah,
he used to teach that in the 70s, you know.
Well,
no, that
actually, I have experienced that, and that's in a... in relation to some Taoist techniques I've been playing with.
Yeah, it's natural to do that when you go inner. You will evoke that It's almost like the nectar of being discarnate, but it's a hint of what we've created on a man-made level.
I don't know if I'm a subgene chat. I really wouldn't say that I am.
No, don't say it. Don't ever tell anybody you are, because then you aren't a subgenius, you know, because we never define what we are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you suggest that. That's a traditional form of taste, smell, intuition, but stay tuned over the next while, and I'll tell you what the real smell is, okay? We've got to go. Somebody's telling me that there's another caller. So, Andrew, thanks for your pledge, and call back if we run out of calls.
No problem.
Mike hasn't cut me off.
Okay.
Thanks, Andrew.
Good night.
Good night.
That's true. You know, you tell someone you're a subgenius, it's like winning the lottery. Before you know it, you've got people lining up outside your door, people asking for money, people phoning all the time. It's
very perceptive, Mike, yeah.
It's a delicate thing. Let's go right to this next caller who's been waiting very patiently.
Okay.
Hello, C. Carolyn.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Mike.
Hi.
Hi, Phil here.
Hi, Phil.
Phil Marvin. I wanted to tell you, Bob, I've been listening to your predictions for the past 17 years that you've been on the radio.
Thanks.
And I want you to know that 89, following a lot of your advice, it turned out to be one of the best years of my career.
Thank you.
I'm now the proud owner of a fine two-bedroom townhouse in Whitby.
Slack. That's slack.
And have just last month purchased a Ford Escort.
It was a good year.
I have two questions for you.
Okay.
First is, will, in 1990, because you were doing predictions earlier,
yeah,
will Mila Mulrooney join up with the Steel Wheels Tour? And two, what do you think the future of marketing of children's war toys is?
All right, dealing with Mila, you know, not many people know that you-know-who is an alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, she has to do a lot of shopping to compensate for that.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, I haven't said who, but we all know.
Yeah.
We've got to watch those lawsuits.
Yeah, and she's not Mrs. You-Know-Who.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think that since You-Know-Who is an alcoholic and the former, say, a relative of Margaret was not an alcoholic, but
uh-huh,
he used the other stuff, right?
Uh-huh.
Then I would suggest that Mila will not be attracted to the Stones.
Uh-huh.
I think she's into a rebellion against the radio era liquid of alcohol. So she probably will dig Miles Davis. I think she'll be tuning into Miles' tour. Okay?
That's insightful. I want you to know, you know, I took the advice and I bought into the Ginsu knives. And it's paid off wonderfully for me, and I've been listening to you for close to 22 years now, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, what's Ginsu knives? What did you say?
The Ginsu knives. I bought in. I bought the shares.
Those guys. Yeah, the Kazars.
Yeah,
Japanese controlled
Kazars. And it paid off tremendously for me, and I want to thank you for that advice.
Okay, well, you're ready for the D-cell. You'd like to have your water purified out there you, right?
That's next. That's the next thing we're going to get as soon as we've got the kids. Now the kids have got mostly all their own clothes now. And which we purchased because 89 has been so successful, thanks to the 26 years we've been listening to you, Bob.
Yeah, well, that's because, so you said 17 first, because 8 and 9 adds up to 17.
That's true.
And
that's true.
The 22 is important to say that after 17, and then 26 is important because all the greats do their best at 26 years old. You know, Orson Welles and then Steven Soderbergh, or whatever his name is, you know, the Zionist wiped-up film director to dominate the American film industry, all totally programmed. But he did it at the age of 26, you know?
I told that when I was working at DeFasco, I told my supervisor those exact same words. That's why you've been on the air for close to 30 years now.
No, 30, not 30.
Sorry, 22.
No. Beyond, what's the next number past 26?
27 years, yes, of course.
Yeah, it's
course,
going down.
See, now that's why I listen to you and why you have the insight and can help people's lives like me.
Yeah, you are a testimonial that I would feel, I really believe what you're saying,
yeah,
and I really would like to give you something.
Let's go to that next question.
What was the other question?
Well, the Ginsu knives work so well, I was thinking of getting into the marketing of children's war toys.
That's every artifact made by man is now reduced to toy.
To a toy. Some of which are ahead of their time.
Yeah, and some are behind their time, but that's not a problem because they get retrieved.
That's true.
You know, the tetrad process.
Mm-hmm.
Toys, T TOYS. I'm sure we can make an acronym for that. To all your subgeniuses, toys. To all, no, to our young subgeniuses.
That's it.
Yeah, TOYS.
That hit home. That one went up the flagpole.
But all media are actors. All media are toys. They're puny compared to the implosive effect of the post-second coming phase of Bobism, which is why we get to the human scale. And
yes.
What do you think that smell is of that time? What's that smell? What was that, Crowbar? What was Crowbar's song?
Crowbarb?
Crowbarb, yeah. What was that song? What's that smell?
I don't know.
Remember that song in the early 70s? What's that smell?
Did Barbara Frum interview them?
Yes.
All right. Let me think then.
Barbara Frum is a German, isn't she?
I think she has something to do with it.
Yep, thanks.
She has something to do with it. She is a little disappointed, but she has something to do with it.
Oh, we've just been correct. Leonard Skinner did What's That Smell?
There you are.
Prophetic song.
Now, would that turn around full circle and come back to Mila?
Yes.
There you are.
Perceptive. You may have a funny voice, but you are... A perceptive person. Don't let them make fun of your voice.
Thank you. No, I would never let anyone make fun of it.
That nasal effect.
It's a wonderful effect.
For some people. Come on now. Don't generalize too broadly. Don't project.
Well, it happened. I didn't used to talk like this. I got scared in the fire, in the coal blaster when I worked at the Fasco.
Right, it's because you start to pick up that smell of the eighth level of Gurdjieff knowledge.
Nothing like a good whiff of ore to help you out that way.
Sudbury ore.
Yeah,
so what is the smell? Then you've been affected by it. Your nose has been affected. What is that smell that we're looking for?
Well, he used to be my supervisor.
What did he smell like?
He had a putrid smell about him, mostly on Mondays and Tuesdays.
So it's hard to express what it is in chemical terms or something, or visual terms.
We were able to get it off him, which is the ironic thing, because we would play hockey Wednesday morning, and all the guys on the team would make him shower after the game.
And in your contacts with UFOs, you did detect that smell. And it was not an alien, not an unfriendly alien.
It didn't scare you at all. As a matter of fact, the guy had probably one of the best scoring averages on the team.
And that's useful.
Of course it is. And it was the kind of... Of course, if you were on the other team, there was an element of fear involved.
But if you were a pink, there was fear.
Yes.
So for your subgenius, this stench does not bother.
Yes. And ironically, even back in the days of the Fasco, we used to play 22 to a side.
Is that right?
Yes.
See, you were on the path. No wonder you've been listening to me. You've been listening to me for a long time.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I think we got any more? Shall we let this guy go on? No.
Well, it's fine. I've said what I want to say. Thank you for a great 89, and I'm looking forward to the marketing of the Children's War Toys in 90.
Good luck, Bill.
And hopefully we'll have two escorts in the driveway before you know it.
Excellent. Stay in touch.
Thank you.
Bye, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Oh, wow, what a caller, right?
A caller from Whitby.
That's inspired. Did we explain everything? What's the smell? What's that smell? We got no callers, right, Mike?
Let's wrap things up, Bob.
Oh, you're going to leave it at that? What time is it?
After one.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
You gave us a lot of time. Well, where the hell is the callers from Baldwin Foods that I'm supposed to promote and they're supposed to reciprocate and call in? Where are they? Okay, well, if you didn't call...
We have, it's like the stock exchange. We're up and down on alternating weeks. Like the last time we were on the air, more calls than we could handle and some great calls. This week, a few calls, but,
No, but important
good
new
callers.
Yes.
New
callers.
That's what's important. Every week there are new callers.
Ian used to be my bodyguard, all right? Ian used to be my bodyguard. I don't think he's ever called in on the show. So it was a new experience for Ian.
I often wonder what happened to Ian.
Yeah. Well, he's typing.
So we'll see you in 2 weeks.
No, we have a call.
No, that's the end of the show.
No, if it's an interesting person. Maybe he's making a reservation for next week.
No,
come on.
No, you can take this person.
Okay, tune in at 2 o'clock. We'll be back for some more stuff.
Yeah, you're back at 10. But you will answer these calls personally.
Yeah, I'll take this
and,
private call.
Thanks. I'm going to be around for another hour or so. Okay.
Thanks, Leonard.
So 2 weeks of that...
21st or
so. Well, it's our pre-Christmas show. It's not after Christmas.
Yes, 20th. Be the 20th.
Okay. See you on the 20th.
See you on the 20th or... We'll ignore Christmas as much as possible.
I'm going to play a little bit of the subgenius tape while I switch studios, okay?
All right. Maybe you want to... Okay.
confusion out.
You would volunteer. My mother and I were standing just about in the same spot where I am. I was sitting on my mother's shoulders. I was 6 years old at the time.
Yeah. And what did you see?
Well, I remember, you know, seeing the crowd start, you know, jumping up as the motorcade made the corner off of Main Street there and came down Houston the wrong way. Then it turned here on Elm Street. And as the motorcade got in pretty clear sight, you know, I was sitting on my mother's shoulders, and I remember very vividly my mother saying, "Mark, wave to the president." So I started waving to the president and waved till he got, I guess, just about the, where that stripe is right there. And at that point in time, I thought I saw him kind of going forward, clutching his throat, falling forward. And just about the time he was even with that second pole over there, I guess, where the shot came, that the theory is from the grassy knoll that popped the top of his head off.
Did you see that? Do you remember that?
I remember hearing it. I can't swear that I saw it, but it was distinctively a gunshot. And at that point in time, my mother grabbed me off her shoulders and fell on top.
Where did you think it came from?
Well, now in retrospect, I stumped out my mind that the fatal shot came from the grassy knoll.
No doubt, huh?
Yeah.
At the time, what did you think?
I really
didn't remember. Surely your family talked about it.
Yeah, I remember hearing Mom and Dad talk about it. You know, there's so many theories. Supposedly, you know, newscasts and things, you saw a picture of a shirt and jacket that the president was supposedly wearing with a bullet hole in the back, which leads to the theory that, you know, he was shot, you know, several times. But my mother and I didn't hear it in her ear.
How many shots did you hear?
I just remember hearing the one. But, you know, like I say, I was 6 years old.
Right.
And I certainly
how many did she remember hearing?
She doesn't even like to talk about it. But
yeah. When she does,
she kind of believes that there was more than one shot. She's never really, I never really pressed on
more than one assassin, you mean? Is that what you mean?
Well, yeah, that theory, too. Now, like I say, in retrospect, there's not a doubt in my mind that the fatal shot came from the grassy knoll. However, I don't know who was in the school book depository.
Right.
I don't believe that anyone was.
It was that man we were just talking to.
You could be right. But what I do believe is if there was a man in the school book depository, why, when he had a good clean shot there on Houston Street, did he not take it?
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
That was an awfully, awfully good shot to make from that building.
Yes.
Here.
Could have got the whole
moving
car.
Target. Awfully good.
Oh, but if he'd have shot him down there, he could have gotten the whole car. Oh, my goodness. You come down here every year?
No, I really hadn't started. Well, we came down here, I think, the first or second year after it happened. But in the last 4 or 5 years, I've really started to, you know, look into the matter. It's just kind of a hobby.
Well, what do you do now, if you don't mind telling
me? I'm a private investigator.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. And have you looked into this? Have you tried to apply what you know about private investigation to
I've applied,
this?
You know, what skills that that I learned, you know, in with combination of reading all the articles and everything I can get my hands on. And I've used the Freedom of Information Act, the State's Open Record Act, as, you know, to the best of my ability to try and get some more information. But there's a deep cover-up, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes beyond, you know, organized crime.
Can you say what you think it is?
Oh, I believe it's a combination of organized crime and possibly a CIA cover-up. Because if you take everything into perspective that you've read and heard over the years, the CIA and the Secret Service and the Warren Commission want you to believe that Kennedy's body was transported by Air Force One from left field back to Dallas or back to Washington, and it lied in state. But when the Secret Service went over to get the hearse from, I believe it was O'Neill Funeral Home, at that point in time it was a new hearse. I don't know exactly how many miles it had on it. But approximately 14 or 16 months later, when it was returned to O'Neill Funeral Home, it had about 24,000 miles on it. That leads me to believe that the Secret Service took the body, packed it in dry ice, is another story that I've heard from time to time, and went by way of, you know, Seattle, Washington, or whatever, to get back to the White House to alter the body to fit the autopsy that they'd already worked out and to fit into the Warren.
Did you see the Nova report on public television?
That's about the only one I haven't seen. I've seen the Arts and Entertainment, of course, Jack Anderson's. And,
are you a former police officer?
No, I have no law enforcement experience at all.
Other than your training as a private eye. It's a very interesting point of view. Well, you know, your parents are still alive, right?
Oh, yeah.
Are they?
My mother
and you're still alive, but you're a witness to one of the most interesting, mysterious crimes, whatever it was.
A lot better off than most of the witnesses.
Most of them?
Well, you know, I don't even really consider myself a witness because at 6 years old, you know, what can I remember?
But you might have been able to, but obviously, you know, you were.
Yeah, if I'd been a little bit older and, you know, had my thoughts about me.
Well, who had their thoughts about them that day,
well,
as it turns out?
That's true.
Thanks for your time.
Well, you're more welcome.
Listen to KNON.
And the question always begs itself, where were you when it happened? What did you do?
As is in my Warren Report testimony, waiting tables,
the Holy Writ.
Kennedy was assassinated. One of the other waiters said something about what a tragedy it was, and I said the only reason I didn't kill him was because I wasn't in the right place. He was gonna throw. I hated Kennedy. I wanted him dead so bad it was like a face. The only thing that disappointed me about my conversations with that weird Nazi brother-in-law, Slim, the one that talked to me about the racist conspiracy, was that. He didn't seem like he was actually going to go out and assassinate Kennedy. He always left me with, after our conversations, always left me with the impression that he was playing with my mind. So,
master of your own thoughts and actions. Through the power of positive suggestions, you can direct your life and you can receive from life anything you desire. As a sincere and intelligent person, you can show others the way to gracious living the way to better living through genuine praise and appreciation. You can feed the hunger of others for recognition with your truthful consideration of their needs, your spoken approval of their actions. You and you alone have the power to do a great deal of good for others, to accomplish good for yourself. Rewards of appreciation, material and spiritual, will come to you when you give of yourself to others. You have unselfishly decided to give praise to others, praise to magnify their self-respect. You have accepted the truth of the constructive good of praise, just as you would have others find the good in you. You will seek the good in them. This will become your avid, sincere desire, a positive habit of your nature. You will look first for the better side of another's character, searching, always searching for the things you want others to find in you. A dynamic power for good is becoming active in your life. You now have the ability through praise to enrich the lives of others, the ability to help them grow, the ability to rid them of fear and apprehension. Through positive suggestion, you have the power to change your world and to help others to change theirs to a happier and better world. Everyone needs your approval, needs your encouragement, especially those whose love you treasure most. You will strive to always let them know that you sincerely appreciate the things they do. You will tell them. You will not withhold the gracious words they yearn to hear. You will tell them. You will seize every opportunity to tell others that you do recognize their desire to please you or perform for you. Their love, taken into your heart, will glorify your own. You will find contentment, satisfaction, and peace of mind. Repeat and repeat these positive affirmations to yourself, and they will become the motivating force of your daily life. You will do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Is there a comparison?
This is Bob's Top Show.
acoustic tactile conditions. You have no centers and no margins. You are everywhere. You are involved with everything.
Hi, Bob. It's Connie.
So I know what's happening with you. Many of the fads are created by me due to textual shifts in the sensory ecology through our electric extensions.
We're escalating our programming here. We are no longer going to just have the food access to talk to the access to we have.
You read my mind, right? That's exactly what I was.
That's almost at the background, Janice. By any chance? I know.
Well, he's her god father.
The angelic.
Yeah, it's sign for the new age.
For the pronto.
Is that what you were worried about?
Apparatus. Yeah. Yeah, things confuse me.
And then a special for about 15, 20 minutes.
Maybe.
An amazing special.
They're going to do it.
I'll just stop over, please. It's quite a 1720s Danzig labor leader. They succeeded in toppling the Warsaw government, which went bankrupt after paying off the bonds in 1981. Walesa, the banker's labor front, is going to help pay off the banks now by severe austerity. He will do what the Warsaw government couldn't get away with doing themselves. After all, the United States is likewise bankrupt. We lean heavily on Japan and West Germany to prop up our huge deficit bonds. We worked a deal with the Soviets to reunite Germany. It would save hundreds of billions of dollars for us and the Soviets. Suddenly, the press says, the Soviets are not our enemy, as if we ever were. Remember, the Western bankers financed the rise of Hitler as a buffer against the Soviets. The whole history of the 20th century has to be rewritten, starting with the Bolshevik Revolution, 1917. All during the Second World War, major U.S. firms had secret joint business with the Nazi industry, General Motors, General Electric, Ford, and Standard Oil. It's all documented in Anthony Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. Relying on seldom mentioned documents of the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal, 1948, the top officials of GE and other Western industrialists, including the Rockefellers, should have been fingered as war criminals at Nuremberg. They own and operate, however, the instruments of communication, so nothing is said in the Western press about any of this. The Western bankers want Germany reunited so we can bring home the troops. The U.S. needs some of them to patrol the U.S.-Mexican border. Hundreds of thousands have flooded north, causing the U.S. taxpayers billions. And by the way, the rich don't pay much taxes. The Pope demands that Catholics produce children without limits. No birth control in every country in this hemisphere south of the United States. The Soviets are hooking their ruble to gold. Soon, gold-backed Soviet bonds will be sold in the United States. After all, the Soviets are the world's second largest producer of the shiny metal. The U.S., being bankrupt, has to reshuffle the U.S. paper money. The excuse? New technology makes it too easy to counterfeit Federal Reserve notes. By the way, the paper money cannot rightfully be called the U.S. dollar. Federal Reserve funny money is issued by a private bank masquerading as a government entity. And the paper is backed by hot air. Not silver, not gold, nothing. The devaluation of the Federal Reserve green stamps, that's what they should be called, is part of a banker's scenario to wind down the Cold War and reorganize the U.S. bonds into paper money. Americans are about to be hit with a devastating devaluation. It will make real estate mortgages harder to pay. Just another story suppressed by the liars and whores of the press. Playing again, the great wiretap scandal, 731-1505.
And that was Sherman Skolnick. I'm going to start things off just a little bit quieter tonight, a little quieter than usual, I suppose. You know, I'm feeling it's kind of down mood, so I'm just going to get really, melancholy kind of stuff. Yeah. So, here we go.